Tammy, I wanted to bring up something to you today. A really scary thing happened to me today at work, and I haven't experienced anything like it in a long time. I wanted to talk to you about what happened first because I thought it was appropriate, and we were recording the podcast tonight.
Wow, I was going to ask you questions, but instead, you're going to tell me something voluntarily, and this just... Mm-hmm. I don't know. It makes me feel whole and happy inside. So I'm all ears. The floor is yours.
Well, Miss Tammy, today I had my second ever in my whole life panic attack. Normally panic attacks last, what I'm familiar with, maybe 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
This was an hour and a half. I thought I had to go to the hospital. I couldn't work today. I went to work and I almost passed out, and then I had to go inside, sit down, and then I went nonverbal, and the only thing I knew how to say was, I turned to my boss and I said, I'm having a panic attack. And then I walked to the couch and I sat there, and then my motor skills became non-existent, and I didn't know how to pick up a cup, and I forgot how to swallow.
Sure.
And I started panicking more. Mm-hmm. And then I laid down my back. All I could do was put my hand on my mouth and put other hand on my chest,
mm-hmm,
and stare. And that's all I could do. And my heart was racing so horrifically. And it happened out of nowhere. I don't know what triggered it. I was just outside pointing a camera at a building, testing a camera out. And then all of a sudden, I go flush. I get weak. My heart starts to race. Something happened where I just was no longer functional. Today, I got paid to have a panic attack at work.
The first thing I feel about that is empathy.
You're hip on the panic attacks. You know something about that?
I do know a little something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm makes my heart hurt for you that happened.
Yeah.
But I'm also really grateful that you signed up to work for an employer who is also empathetic and supportive of you. Mm-hmm. I think that really, like, deep in my gut, makes me grateful that this is the choice that you made.
Yeah.
And that you're surrounded by people who support you both in our family and in your workplace. I'm not going to make this about me, but I want to tell you, I can't believe that this happened to us in the same week.
Oh, snap. What happened to you this week?
So this week I went to bed. And we haven't talked about my kids yet, but more than one of my girls has some pretty serious health conditions. And this week I went to bed and I woke up in the middle of the night and my heart was just pounding, mm-hmm, like pounding. And I was panicking, but it was in the middle of the night. And I woke up in the middle of the night and it wasn't like a nightmare situation. There was something else going on, and I woke up with, like, my heart racing. I was, like, in a cold sweat, and then I heard the oxygen machine. The oxygen machine was on. So that kind of registered that the oxygen machine was on, and so I went to my daughter's bedroom, and I stood in her doorway, and I said, I didn't say anything. I was just kind of looking in the room to see what had happened.
Yeah.
And she said, why are you staring at me? And I said, well, I heard your oxygen machine was on. And she said, yeah, well, I'm really congested tonight, so I turned it on so that I could sleep better and breathe. And I was like, oh, okay. And I went back to bed. And what I didn't realize was that just the sound of the oxygen machine had triggered that kind of fight response,
sure,
in me because of the trauma that I had experienced from dealing with her needing to be on oxygen. And, like, she hasn't turned that machine on for, like, 6 months since she got her transplant. So I genuinely understand what you're experiencing. But for me, I was able to determine what the trigger was.
Yeah.
You were unable to determine what the trigger was. And so, I mean, fast forward a couple of days and there were some people at work and we're kind of just chatting, and I said, and I kind of told them what it is. And, like, the room was silent when I said, you know, I got up, I went to her room, et cetera, et cetera. And everything just went silent in the room. And one of my colleagues said, you have trauma.
Mm. That's that they just dropped that on you?
Just period. She's like, oh, you have trauma because of all, you know, all of the medical things that we had been through. And it wasn't like I registered like, I didn't even think about it. And then she said, the body really does keep the score. And there's a book about trauma, and it's called
The Body Keeps the Score.
The Body Keeps the Score. And she was like, this is like a really clear example of the body keeping the score, even when the mind does not consciously understand what's happening. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so in your situation, it's the same thing where your body keeps the score and you can't even consciously or cognitively know what it was that triggered that.
Yeah.
But something did, and then your body responded.
Shut down. My body.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Panic.
Which
about
is,
it.
Yeah. So I was like, and we've done a lot, which is so crazy. Like, you would think I know better. I am trauma informed care certified.
Yeah.
But when it happens to you, all that training and all that work.
Out the window.
Yeah.
You know, it gets serious. That was the thing that I noticed today when I was having my panic attack, is how serious it gets so fast. Like, how shit, everything you know, everything you remember, all your knowledge goes from 0 to 100, and you're just all of a sudden clueless and on survival mode. It's crazy. Like, you're like, you have all these survival tactics that you've developed, and you have all this knowledge of what anxiety is and what panic is, and then
right.
when you're in the middle of it, you're just
right
fucked. You're just
you
like,
think you
uh-oh.
Have all these coping skills
right.
established and how you're
right,
and then it happens, and it's like you're at the mercy of your autonomic nervous system. Like, it just kicks in, and the bottom line is that you are going to either you're going to fight, you're going to do the flight thing and run, or you're going to freeze. Like, that portion of your brain, right? Excuse me, the amygdala takes over, and then you're like stuck in that reptilian brain.
Mm-hmm.
And like the higher level functions of your brain literally do not function.
No.
You can't think anything. You can't strategize anything.
I can't even swallow my water.
No, you can't. You can't plan anything. You can't figure your way out of it. The only thing that you can do, like, really genuinely, the only thing that you can do is wait it out.
I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, you feel like you're dying. Like,
I
you
really
literally
thought
feel like you're
die.
Dying. Or, like, in my case, when I was triggered by that crazy, because now I look back at it and I'm like, okay, that's ridiculous. It's just a machine that clicked on. And I wish that I could emulate the sound of that machine, because it I don't know, it just seems so irrational that just the sound of that machine going click, click.
And then all of a sudden you're primal again.
Yeah. And it's not like you said, it's not like I feel like I'm dying, but it is like there is the end to my world. Like, I'm not dying, but the world as I know it is ending. Like, it's falling apart, and there's nothing that I can do about it.
Out of your control. It's out of your control.
Right, because that is, to me, synonymous to the potential end to the life of my oldest child. Like, I just didn't even, like, see that coming. As you, probably, you have no idea what triggered it, right?
You want to
Please.
Talk about triggers? You want to
Please.
Talk about triggers? Can
yeah,
I be
I
real with you?
Of course.
This is going to be real talk. We're going to get real. We're going to get real. I'm going to roll up my sleeves. You ready? Okay. And I don't want to take it here, but I'm taking it there, okay? And I'll tell you probably what triggered me now that we're talking about it and what's really bugging me deep down. Now that I'm talking with you, I'm kind of realizing some shit. In 2020, one of my best friends had taken his own life. His name was Nick Brown, and he worked at the same job I did, which was a video production company.
Hmm.
And he was the one who got me the job.
So I'm sorry to interrupt, but is this the job with the company you currently work with now? The current employer?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Fast forward to current day, I'm working at his desk.
Max.
I'm working at his desk where he worked for, you know, 5+ years. When I knew him, I would.
Do you know how old he was?
Oh no, he was 20 something.
He was young.
Yeah, he was. He was. Young. He was a young bull. He was. He was in his mid-20s.
Okay.
Yeah, it's. I don't know, but I that's one of the things I have noticed is bizarre, is working at your dead homie's desk And that's where you remember him. Like there was never a Nick Brown outside of Digital Brand. It's like, this is my coworker homie. We go play board games sometimes outside of work.
I love it.
But I know Nick Brown in a work context mainly.
Yeah.
And so when I'm at work, I'm thinking, well, I'm not thinking about it, but that's definitely
It's like
subconsciously what's
absolutely
happening.
Those memories are still right.
Yeah.
Those memories are still, stored for you. I mean, you were kind of young when he passed away.
Yeah.
And then I genuinely believe that as we age, we deal with loss and grief. And like we learn how to deal with loss and grief as we get older. So I feel like, do you feel like you were able to deal with that loss and to grieve? Or was that whole process something that was part of what you ran from when you went to Atlanta?
I tried to run from grieving him, but I ultimately did the whole time. I grieved him, and I grieved him good. I had a picture of him hung up, took it down by year four. I was like,
Bless you.
I'm like, fuck that. I don't want to see him no more.
Right. That's healthy, though.
That's healthy.
No, allow yourself to feel the feels.
Oh, well, yeah. It started off like, oh, I miss him so much, to like, okay, I don't want you looking at me. I don't want my dead friend looking at me.
I love you so much.
That's a successful grieving journey.
It is.
I grieved it. Right. And of course.
Right.
I'm still grieving. We're on grievings forever, but.
Right. You know, I know that people are like, in time, as much time passes, then it's going to get better. But the reality is that loss is loss. And that when you think about there's no way to like think about what you once had and to acknowledge that it's gone. And then now you don't feel like it's lost anymore. That's not like, it's not even humane to even think in that way.
Right.
So now you're back in the place. This is crazy what you're going through right now. That may or may not have been the trigger for what happened today.
It could have been.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, might as well. I'm not going to put it on that, but I'm going to say probably didn't help.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Can you tell me maybe like 3 to 5 of your favorite things about him?
Yeah. Nick Brown, I loved, and this is funny, I loved that he was a pessimist.
Okay.
But genuinely, I loved that he just was so sure of how things were. I'm trying to find the word for it.
Was he like very pragmatic or a realist? Is that what
he saw the world in one way. I'm not bringing children into this world.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I just loved that he was just like, this is who I am. This is how I see the world. Everything's shit. What else did I love about Nick? I loved his talent. Nick was one of the most talented videographers ever, and he was so humble. He was so quiet and shut and mute, and he was never gatekeeping his skills. Hmm. He gave me all of his knowledge before he passed.
But even though he wasn't optimistic about his own future,
he loved me.
It didn't keep him from being optimistic about your future.
Oh my God. The things I heard about after he had passed, and the things that people had told me, how he called me his younger brother and yada, 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 and all this sweet shit, things that came out of his mouth that I would have never expected. Nick suffered from hardcore depression. He couldn't feel the love that we were giving him, but it was funny because it was ironic because he was able to give so much love. I don't even think he realized how much love he gave, even though he refused to receive it, which was crazy. So I love that I loved his talents and I loved how willing he was to share them. Isn't it weird how many different people perceive you? Like, I think it's really bizarre. I think it's so bizarre that everyone knows a different version of you. I want to talk about that. I think it's funny I think it's funny that there's so many different versions of me out there. There's only one me, but there's 1,000 different versions.
Based on
individual perceptions.
Yes.
There's people who think I'm an asshole. There's people who've only met me for 30 seconds who I was probably... was an asshole.
But there's also people who've only known you for 30 seconds who think, I'm like, he's the most compassionate person I've ever met.
There's just so many different V's of me roaming around. What's up with that? There's so many different versions.
Right. And which I think complicates things, which contributes to the imposter syndrome that we talked about already, but also makes me want to ask you the question, which version do you believe?
I don't know. I don't know what version I am. It gets complicated, right? There's so many different versions of you. There's a version of you who does drugs, and then there's a version of you who drinks, and there's a version of you who is a computer nerd, and there's a version of you who makes music, and there's a version of you who has a podcast with Tammy Hope, and there's a version of you who's a heartbreaker. There's a version of you who was a pizza maker at one point.
There's a version of you who was like memorizing Bible verses and it's like a church attender. And
there's too many versions.
True.
I don't know what version I identify with. I don't know who that is. I don't know which one I am.
Right.
I'm an accumulation of all the versions. I don't. That's a great question. I probably should chew on that for a little bit.
Maybe not. I mean, and I guess maybe as you're saying that, I'm thinking maybe it's an acknowledgement that you are amalgamation of all of these versions.
Right.
It's such a beautiful thing for you to recognize that you could be all these things to so many different people in so many different ways.
I'm just aware that there.
Yeah, that's powerful to know that. To know that
there's someone who
yes.
There's a version of you that isn't liked. There's a version of you who is loved and admired. I don't believe that there is a version of you that you can lock in with.
How could you? If you're stagnant, like there's no way, because you're human and you're always growing and you're always being influenced by the like the next stimuli, the next relationship.
Yeah.
Like if we say that a 30 second encounter with somebody will change how you interact with the next person, then how many 30 second encounters are you going to experience in a day?
Right.
Or in a lifetime? And so you're always growing, you're always and changing, always changing. But I really love that you haven't decided who you are. I think that's I really think that's really healthy that you recognize that who you are is growing and changing and that it's fluid. I really think that is brilliant. There's a book by, I don't know if you know who Mel Robbins is.
Nope.
So great author, great person. Wrote a book called The High Five Habit.
The High Five Habit.
Yeah.
What's that?
I love it so much. So this is a super Cliff Notes version. And basically, High Five Habit is you get up in the morning and you look yourself in the mirror and you give yourself a high five.
Do you do that? Have you done that before?
Yes.
What does that do for you? What is a high five
so,
in the morning do?
So many things. So one of the things, and maybe because you're not a woman, you don't know this, but one of the things that it does for us as women is that we have a tendency to look at the mirror. We look in the mirror and all we can see is our flaws. And the idea, basically some of the ideas behind this book, and there's like, you should read it because it's like way more than I could tell you in the moments I'm telling you, is that you look in the mirror and you look into your own eyes and you're like, you're beautiful. Mm. I'm going to high five the mirror. I'm giving you a high five and you got this. Psychologically, what that does for you is you start to see yourself beyond your flaws. You start to see yourself as really another human, another companion.
You a friend.
Yeah.
Tammy, I will say and it's something I'm proud of, and I've actually worked on this for a long time, and this is almost high five adjacent, where I will look at myself in the mirror and I'll be like, you good, bro. I'll always say that every day.
Oh my gosh, do you really?
I swear to God.
You are so far ahead of the game.
I say you're good, bro, every day. I look at myself in the mirror, and when I say I dap me up, that's what I mean. I go, you're good, bro.
Okay, so that's
you're
it.
You're good, bro.
Okay, so you should write your own book.
Called You're Good, Bro.
Or dap me up.
Dap me up.
I love that.
Give yourself if you're not comfortable with high fiving the mirror in the morning, dap yourself up in the morning.
Yeah.
And just say you're good. And that's all you need to hear some days. All you need to hear is, bro, you're good.
Right. And then if you are prone to a self-deprecating narrative,
man.
Like you make a mistake and you're like, I'm an idiot or whatever. Yeah. All those things that you could say, or I never do anything right or whatever that is. Like if you can replace it with you're good, bro. Or high five, you got this,
yeah.
Or I love you or whatever it is, then Like, you can conquer anything. You can handle anything because you believe in yourself.
What are some topics you want to talk about?
Are you my Kish?
What does that mean?
Can we talk about that just one time?
Yeah,
because
let's
it's
do
like
it.
Because are you my Kish has to do with like family.
Okay.
And being family.
Okay, I'll take it there.
And so we're gonna do like a shout out to my bestie.
Okay, who is your bestie, Tammy?
My bestie is Holland, and her last name is Kish.
Holland Kish. Shout out Holland Kish.
Absolutely, my absolute best friend in the whole wide world. And so she has 3 girls, and they're close in age to my youngest 2. We are really tight, and our kids kind of did all the things together. I was in her house. She was in my house. They slept over. We slept over. We travel, whatever. Did everything together. And then fast forward, I have a granddaughter. My granddaughter, obviously, is engaged and intertwined in all these really awesome relationships with these other people. And one day, she had encountered somebody who she knew I had a relationship with, but she wasn't quite sure because she was pretty young. She must have been like 5 or 6. So I should back up and say that we would always say the Kishes are coming over, or we're going to go over to the Kishes' house, or yeah, we're going to meet the Kishes at the zoo or whatever. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And so she meets this girl and she knows that we're familiar with one another. And she looks up at her and she says, "Are you my Kish?"
Are you my Kish?
Are you my Kish? And it was because she had equated the word Kish synonymously with family.
Oh.
As if to say, are you my cousin? Are you my family member?
Funny.
Isn't that?
That is crazy.
Isn't that hilarious? And
are
so,
you my Kish?
Yeah. So she thought Kish
just meant family.
Yeah. It was equivalent to like the word kin. Mm. And because we were so tight and so connected with one another, like they're not our blood relatives. And I guess that's the thing, like for me and you even, or for anybody else, is that there are family members who you're connected to because they actually are your family members. And then there are family members that you acquire because of whatever connection you have with them.
Yes.
And I thought, that is so amazing. And like, sometimes I just want to look at people and I want to say, you're my Kish.
I was about to say.
You are my Kish. Or, you are not my Kish.
Oh, you could say that like instead of saying like gang or yeah, like friend, like you're not Kish. Like you're not, you cannot hang with us.
Isn't that crazy though?
Like, funny.
But from such a, like a, the childlike mind, she really had no idea that we weren't blood related.
Wow.
Like she was just completely clueless. And she just thought, you know, Kish is what you call people who you love and who are dear to you.
That's so sweet.
Isn't it?
That is really funny. That's so sweet. I wanted to, that's like another topic that I cut, that I like talking about, that I wonder if we could summarize into a smaller chunk, a cliff note version of this topic.
Okay.
Chosen family. I think I cut that
out. Oh, have we actually talked about that?
The Kishes.
Yeah.
The Kish is into choosing your family versus who your real family is.
Or your physical, biological family.
Your physical, biological family doesn't have to be your family. You have the freedom to choose your own family. You can choose your own family. Choose your own adventure. This life is a choose your own adventure game. You can pick who is your family. You don't have to rock with your real family if you don't want to.
I genuinely believe that... all relationships can be healed and restored, but I never think that that should be forced.
Mm.
So if you need to, like you said, like abandon, is it, what was the word you used for your previous family, your natural family or your birth family? Like
biological.
Your biological, it's like abandon them or step away from them or create some type of separation. And I think sometimes that's necessary so that you can heal. And I would hope that in some point in time, your own healing would allow you to reestablish those bonds or recreate them if they hadn't been created previously. Like that would be my hope.
Yeah.
But if you need to step away from that, I think that's a really healthy choice. And then if you know that there's people who are in your proximity or who are around you who, one, can accept you for who you genuinely are. And I think that gets to another thing, is that I think that if you are going to accept somebody for who they genuinely are, then you accept them for the best parts of them, but you also accept the parts that are in progress, right? You accept that imperfection as well, so that if somebody really loves you, they're the kind of person who'd be like, okay, I love you, but babe, maybe you might want to think a little bit longer about the decision you just made. Or
I think it's really important to have people around you who don't judge you, but they don't allow you to crash out.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page with that.
Yeah,
like they don't judge you, but then if they see you doing something that's self-destructive, they're willing to either step in or to create some kind of net for when you fall.
Sure. Very important.
But again, there's no judgment, because if you have a bunch of people who are like, ugh, that behavior is not something I approve of, it's not something I want anything to do with, then they set a boundary that shuts you out. And then when you're making mistakes and you have the potential to grow and change, you have no one around you to support you if they don't.
And that's isolating.
Absolutely.
You don't want friends or family. You don't want to feel like you're walking on eggshells when you're just existing.
For sure.
You just want to exist. You just want to be able to make mistakes. You want to be able to live without having to feel like you're walking on eggshells or hiding parts of yourself. That's what family's for. I think you need that. I don't know.
I think that's the worst thing. I think probably of all the things that I could go through in life, being isolated, I think that's the, like, if you wanted to torture me.
Put you in a room?
I guess you could say put me in the room, but isolate me from anybody that cares about me and isolate me from anybody who I might be able to care for.
Mm.
That would be torture for me.
Should we wrap this up?
Max and Tammy, and you've been listening to?
You and I just talked. Have a good night. Take care of yourself. Ask for help if you need it. If you're a friend suicidal, pop
absolutely.
Out, show up.
One, yeah, you know, Max, we need to include that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Stay there with your
friends.
You've
been that low? I've been that low. Like, yeah. I literally have been that low. And I called that number.
Yeah.
I called that suicide line. And it saved my life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
100% it saved my life. I was by myself and I was alone and I called that number and they connected me with help and changed my life. It was over a decade ago. You can call or text 988.
That's 988. If you're going through it, call that number. You're not alone, dude.
Absolutely. There's no shame in it.
No.
You're worth it. If you can't tell it to yourself, Max and Tammy will tell you you're worth it. The world needs you. You're here for a reason.
Good night, Max and Tammy. You and I just talked. Oh, it's...